Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey kids, Townsend Coleman here, the voice of Michelangelo from the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Cowabunga! And you're listening to the Neverland Podcast right now, which is totally bodacious.
It's the Neverland Podcast, episode 69. Let's fly away.
Up to Neverland.
Take a star to the right and stay until morning.
Good morning, Neverland!
Hey, it's that time again. It is time to get your pixie out of that pocket. Get her out of there. Shake a little bit of that pixie dust around. Get your happiest thought. We're flying away to Neverland again. And before we get really fully take flight and land in Neverland, of course, I have a few things I must go over with you, almost like a flight attendant telling you your safety procedures. I just want to remind you to email me at podcast@neverlandpodcast.com, which, by the way, neverlandpodcast.com is our website, and you can find all kinds of fun information right there on the website, including our Twitter feed, twitter.com/neverlandpcast, or @neverlandpcast, whichever makes it easier for you to find us. Feel free to tweet us anytime. We love getting your tweets. Share it with your friends and things like that. I try to tweet out and put some fun stuff out there. Also, like the fun stuff I put at facebook.com/neverlandpodcast. That is our like page where you can come and like us. Also, we have a Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/neverlandpodcast. All of these links can be found at neverlandpodcast.com. Also, leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492. I actually just received a very interesting email about a potential future guest, which I can't share the voicemail with you because he does give his phone number and I don't want to give that away. Well, let's just say I just we'll find out later when I have that all booked. It's somebody coming possibly on an upcoming show that you're really going to like to hear from. It's somebody I didn't even know he was involved in what he's involved with. It's not necessarily Disney related, but you're going to love it. But anyway, also on there, on the website, neverlandpodcast.com, you'll find a thing that says Neverlanders with an exclamation point to join the Neverlanders. In there, you can find our list of Lost Boys and Pixies and find out how you yourself can become an official Lost Boy or Pixie. Think of a great and wonderful nickname that tells us a little something about you, and then you'll become Lost Boy or Pixie, blank your first name, and then we'll put in quotes what your nickname, what we refer to you as, because all the Lost Boys have a nickname like Toodles and Don't Ask and things like that. Now, all of you ladies out there, you don't become Lost Boys because girls are too clever to get lost. You will become a Pixie. Pixies are cool anyway, right? So just go ahead and follow those instructions. Send us that email to give us all the information of who you would like to be and what your nickname would like to be. Get your official Lost Boy or Pixie name and become part of that site and become an official Lost Boy or Pixie of Neverland. Now, how fun is that? I think that's lots of fun. In fact, I had fun picking out my own name, which if you want to know what it is, well, if you don't know it by now, anyway, you'll have to just go to the website and take a look. But we have lots of fun to have today on this week's show, so I really just got to get to it. So here we go.
Your attention, please.
Disney movie news.
Okay, this isn't really movie news, but it is some television news. And here to tell you about it, I am about to have some special guests. I had Tim Nidell and Gary Lane on with me from Saturday Morning Rewind. We had a nice little discussion about some news that was released by Terry McGovern this week. For any of you who don't know, Terry McGovern was the original voice of Launchpad McQuack on DuckTales and Darkwing Duck. So what follows is my conversation with Tim Nidell and Gary Lane. Enjoy! Okay, Neverlanders, we have a couple of very special guests to kind of talk about an interesting topic that has popped up this week. We have Tim and Gary from the Saturday Morning Rewind podcast. Say hello, fellas.
Hello, fellow.
Tim was catching on to that one. The jokes are always cheesy around here. So generally, Saturday Morning Rewind, and why you two are perfect for this, is because your guys are all about cartoons, whether they were Saturday Morning or, you know, Disney Afternoon related, anything like that. You guys love to talk to voice actors and to each other about different cartoons. And so if anybody's not listening to their show, go check it out, especially if you used to watch cartoons or you still do.
That's right.
But some interesting information, and I've noticed some for some people this has been like, oh no, you know. So I thought it'd be an interesting little kind of discussion, because as most of you probably know, DuckTales is returning to Disney XD, which is awesome. But we heard this week Terry McGovern had said, you know, he was Launchpad McQuack, for anyone who doesn't know, but he has said that it seems the original cast is not going to be returning. And a lot of us old school people we get used to the old cast. And so you tell us the old cast is not coming back. And there, I tell you what, on Facebook, there was a freak out. So everybody,
present company included, right?
Present company included. And I understand that that's how we are. We're kind of geeky. We kind of get set in how we've loved it and it meant so much to us that when it changes, sometimes it's a growing pain for us. It's like, no, but we wanted this. Nobody else has ever voiced Scrooge except for one other guy, maybe a couple times, you know. This is the type of things I saw. You know, I was like, oh, man. It's like this. I didn't expect this sort of an impact, but well, we'll kind of just go around. Since Gary got here first, we'll let Gary talk about his reaction to this first.
Well, you know, whenever the news officially broke, at first I was apprehensive, and I'll be using that word a lot, or at least I'll be thinking it a lot, because it's hard to say anything yet. And of course, whenever I heard the news of the voice cast being recast, I was pretty annoyed at first, but as time went on and you know, I thought about it, I realized, you know, Disney's smart. They're not going to do anything to alienate us older fans, but they also want to keep bringing in the new fans. And perfect example is, or maybe not a perfect example, but an example nonetheless, is recently in the current ongoing Ninja Turtles cartoon, the voice of Leonardo had to be recast because Jason Biggs went on some sort of anti-women, something rant on Twitter. And a lot of people got upset about that. So then they brought in Seth Green, who sounds absolutely nothing like Jason Biggs. And, you know, I guess it's smart because Alan Young and Terry McGovern, they're up there, Alan especially. He's 95 or 96 now. And, you know, he's not going to live forever. And, you know, I hope he's still with us in 2 years, whenever the show actually airs, but there's no guarantee that, you know, we'll have him for as many seasons as it runs. So it's best to be proactive, I suppose, but it still kind of hurts as a fan, you know?
Yeah. And you, Tim, what are you thinking?
I had the same thought when they first announced the new series. What was it? Maybe just a month ago they announced it. I thought in my mind, it's like, they better start recording now before Alan Young. You know, we don't want to pass away too soon, but 95, 96 is pretty old. So I was kind of hoping that they'd record now, you know, have the full cast. But then when they announced, or when Terry announced that the original cast would not be returning, of course, I'm still disappointed. But, you know, a few of the members have already passed. We lost Hal Smith, Blake Gyro, and Hamilton Camp, Fenton, and Gizmo Duck, two, you know, pretty big characters in the role. And Miss Beakley, what's her name? Joan Gerber, she passed away also. And, you know, so there's three of the main cast right there, but
still on the other side. The voice of Glomgold, I think, has passed away as well.
Yeah. Hey, was that one Hal Smith too?
It was.
Maybe.
I think it might have been, yeah. And so on the other side of the spectrum, I still would love to see, you know, Terry McGovern, who can still do the voice, and Russi Taylor do the nephew. But I don't know. You know, I'm still kind of hopeful for something good out of it. I think Gary makes some good points about Disney knows what to do, and I just hope that remains true. I just my main concern is the animation, honestly.
Oh yeah. The animation was just top notch, and it still holds up. Recently, you know, I was doing some articles for Jason. I don't know how to say his last name, Schlierman, but for DAFradio.net, on his website, he had me do a blog thing, and I wrote a review of an episode of Darkwing Duck. And in the process of wanting to do stuff, I went and, you know, found a copy of DuckTales at the library, and I, you know, sit and watch it. The animation is still out par, and the story still fit with me, although I was sitting there thinking, why is that number one lucky dime so important to Magic and Dispel? How come she has to have that dime? It is just a dime, isn't it? So, but it still holds up. I mean, that was just a real special show back in the day. And I guess Disney was looking at, you know, when they did the remastered, and, you know, they got some original cast and they recast some characters, but they found people that could sound just like the original cast. And I only knew that Glumgold had passed away. It's because I was recently, when I did a show with one of the techno retro dads known as Shaz, we were doing something on the Mask series. And one of the voices on Mask, who currently also plays Raj's father on Big Bang Theory, and he also, on video games, he does Barbossa, but he was the one who actually was slated as being the voice of Glomgold in that, and I couldn't even tell a difference. So there, you know, there is that possibility of, even though you can't get the original cast sometimes, that you might find somebody who can do that character so spot on that you might barely notice a difference. So I still have a lot of hope here that's like, yeah, we're going to get different people, but they, I, you know, considering how many times Mickey has been recast to different voices, and Donald and Goofy, they always tend to find somebody who can, you know, even you don't really want an impersonation because that can sound fakey, but somebody who can really embody that character and bring that voice back and sound the way you want them to, the way we're used to it. That's at least what Disney does. Disney always tries to find a good match for your characters. Other cartoons, they get relaunched, you know, like you were mentioning Ninja Turtles. Every, you know, this is the third incarnation we've had on television. Well, other than the live action TV thing that's, we won't mention because it was terrible. But of the animation, you know, we've had different voices each time, except for Rob Paulsen making his return, but he's a different character. That we don't complain about that happening. But with Disney characters, that's the one I think that really strikes the chord with us, because I don't know, maybe it's just more special to us, or why do you think that happens?
Well, I think people are always surprised whenever Disney greenlights anything. I know it surprises me personally. I mean, I know that there was the fan outcry for DuckTales, but whenever they actually said, yeah, we're doing this, I was like, what? Really? So, yeah. I mean, I think that, and, you know, I mean, they're, well, it's kind of like you bring up, and I don't mean to talk over anybody, Tim, but, but I feel like with Ninja Turtles, you know, that's a perfect example, because I have recently been rewatching the 1987 series, and if we're being perfectly honest, while it's completely nostalgic to me, it's not a very good show. You know, it doesn't hold up the same way that DuckTales does. And I think that, you know, DuckTales transcends the generations better with time. And that's kind of where what I think.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you there. I started buying the DVDs when they started releasing those, and was so excited to get the miniseries and just loved it, and it was great. And then I picked up the first official season of it, and I was like, wow, this is just hokey and cheesy. I still love it because of the memories, but I was like, this is kind of bad.
Yeah.
So now some of those old cartoons really do still hold up. I mean, the old He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, the original, I still can watch that one, and it doesn't seem hokey to me.
I still watch it too.
Still love it.
Yeah.
And well, that was kind of a rough thing for me too when they brought Masters of the Universe back there in what, the late 90s, and then, you know, had a whole new voice cast. I know I was a little rough with that one, but I did like having Cam Clark in there as He-Man.
Yeah.
You know, I've been a fan of his ever since Ninja Turtles. Yep. Speaking of,
I didn't even realize they brought that one back.
Yeah, yeah, it was on Cartoon Network for what, two seasons?
Yeah, it was short lived. Yeah,
yeah, they had a pretty good.
I remember the. Oh, go ahead.
They had a pretty good comic book adaption. I had collected a pretty good chunk of it.
Hmm. Yeah, I remember whenever they brought the Thundercats back, and that was also one of those big, like, oh, should we be doing this moments, and then no one watched it. So,
well, I did. I liked it.
I liked it, too. Of course, I loved Thundercats. Okay. I mean, Thundercats is still my all-time favorite cartoon. So,
right.
Now, I came to the original series of Thundercats a bit late because when it was on originally, that was about the time I wanted to go outside and play. And so I wasn't watching it, and I didn't really start paying attention until, I was already an adult, I think, pretty much. Wow. And they brought it back on Cartoon Network, and I watched it. I said, this is the cheesiest thing.
Of course,
I got a DVD of Silverhawks, which I used to love and watch all the time, and I realized Silverhawks is just as cheesy. It's the same thing. So the new Thundercats, I was ready to roll with, but I know like my buddy Phil was just, Lost Boy Phil, for anyone who remembers him. He was just hated the new series because they changed the entire story and the look, and Lion-O didn't look right, and he didn't think the figures looked right. And so it's always, we grow up with something, we get so attached to it that when they come out and change it, we're just,
Well, I think it's kind of like, I think George Lucas kind of started this whole thing where it shows us nothing is sacred. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
into your favorite franchise, and it scares us.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
And the phrase "you've ruined my childhood" gets uttered more times on Facebook than anything else, and I'm almost kind of tired of it. It's like, no, you still have your childhood, and you still have your memories. You still have, because things do get released on DVD, you still can always go back and watch the things that you loved. And if the new version turns out where it's not quite up to what you were hoping, that's okay. You still have the old, and I've tried to tell people that with the new Star Trek movies when they alter the timeline by blowing up Vulcan. Boy, a lot of my Trekker friends were just devastated and so mad. And I says, but it was a good movie. And if you really still love the old Star Trek, it is still there. You own all the seasons of it. You can go back and enjoy it any time that you want.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And there's still books being published with the original timeline. So it's always going to be there. So no one's taking it away from you. It's just sometimes with these new ones come out, you just want everything back that you had, I think, when you were a child. And when it doesn't quite fit your memories, it's just devastating to us. But then you look at like kids and somebody brought this up even on Facebook. And I've even noticed this when I talk to, younger, like teenagers or maybe people in their 20s now. To them, their favorite Star Wars movies are the prequels.
Right.
And those are ones. I'm weird, though. I actually liked The Phantom Menace, and I thought Jar Jar was funny the first two times I watched that movie, but then he got annoying after the third time.
So. Yeah.
No.
Go ahead.
Now, the cool thing I'm thinking of, the good thing about a new DuckTales, is that it's almost a guarantee that we will probably see the final episodes released on DVD. Or some kind of home video format. So I'm really excited for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was going to bring that up if you didn't, because that's very promising news. I mean, nothing's been said officially, but I'm almost certain it'll happen,
Yeah. Well, I think, Gary, it might have been you, Jeremy, on Gary's post. They made a great point how I can definitely see Disney. I would prefer it if Disney released a movie based on DuckTales, and then based a series upon that movie to kind of reintroduce the whole franchise to the younger audience. Now, that is a cool idea.
That would be so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And it would show that it's still a moneymaker.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And if it didn't make money, hey, don't make the series.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it would make money if they did enough respect to the franchise, because, I don't have any children myself, and I know, Tim, you do. I don't know if you do, Gary.
I do not.
Okay. Well, at least Tim and people like Tim that are about our age would be like, oh, I remember this from when I was a kid. I'm going to take my kids now to this because I want them to enjoy it as much as I did.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to pass things down.
Oh, yeah. My girls do not watch modern day cartoons besides a couple of them. We just sat down and watched a couple of episodes of Doug and Real Monsters the other night. And they love, what's their favorite? They love DuckTales and Darkwing. All those shows, we hardly watch anything new. So I think I'm a great father. So thank you.
Yeah, I think that's something about with Disney cartoons in general, they always seem to hold up and have a bit of a timelessness to where you can come back and watch a lot of them So that might be part of why he does weigh in on us so much. Is like, you know, I want it just the way it was because it's still important to me. And then when they come out with these new ones, it does scare us. And even when somebody had shared on Facebook or something, Jim Cummings was even kind of concerned that he wasn't called to come back to voice anybody. And, you know, I can see that from the perspective of the job point of view of like, hey, you know, I kind of put some work into that character and I would really like to come back. And sometimes it's rough, I guess, to see somebody else step in. And in fact, on Rob Paulsen's podcast, somebody once asked him if he had spoken to the original voice of Donatello about him taking his place. And he said, well, it's a job. It's not me taking his place. It's a brand new series. It's a brand new day. I'm now playing that character. And of course, I love what the original actor did, you know, but now it's a brand new look at things. So the only thing I would really hope with the DuckTales series is that they keep it. I mean, the animation style is probably gonna be a little different, but if they keep it in the same spirit of the original DuckTales and not do a drastic change like, you know, Ninja Turtles. I mean, this new CG one, they've even differed from the comic books in the fact that turned one character Krang, who is among a race of aliens, which I forget the name of them. I almost wanted to call them the Ood, but that's not right. But they turned one character's name into a race of Krang and turned them into where they're kind of comical, but that is nothing resembling the comics. Yeah. And with DuckTales, it based upon also a comic book, you know, they do have something to draw upon, and I think Disney is probably a bit more likely to keep it close to what we were used to because it was something that did work and maybe updated a little bit. You know, Huey, Dewey, right. and Louie are computer geniuses or something, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I would love it. The change I would love to see is if Huey, Dewey, and Louie had different personalities.
Yeah.
I can definitely.
And I would like to have Donald Duck a bit more involved.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Has anybody heard from Tony to see if he's I'm assuming he'd voice Donald if he's in it.
I would hope so. He is the heir of it. I mean, he was taught how to do the voice by the second voice of Donald Duck. I forgot the guy's name now. It wasn't Clarence Nash. He was the original guy.
But there
was
I forget the second guy, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same here.
Yeah, but, so...
Yeah.
I would also like to see if because I've had this thought in my head, it would be awesome if they actually, at one point it was the idea that like Duckburg was where all these Disney characters were supposed to live. So if they find a way to have, you know, cameos of Mickey and Goofy, you know, maybe pop in on an episode.
I'm actually getting goosebumps. Yeah, that's a great point.
There's so much potential that, they can change some things. And we would actually be happier that it's like, wow, I wish they'd have done this on the original. So there's that really great possibility of this being better than the original.
Mm-hmm.
I know that might be sacrilege.
Well,
possible.
I mean, it never will be better to our nostalgic inner selves, but I mean, it could be a better show. You know, it's like, it's the new Turtle scenario for me, you know, it's like, the new one is clearly a better show, but which one means more to me, you know, that's what I have to figure out.
Yeah.
But to touch on a point that both of you guys have made in regards to the art, you know, we all know that it's based off of Carl Barks's old comic strips and those were fantastic work. And the original series had that hand-drawn appeal to it. And, you know, I feel like there's several ways that they could go. They could go that way, which is unlikely. They could go the way of the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse CG sort of looking, which is even more unlikely, I hope. But based on the little preview that they've shown of the Disney XD logo with Huey, Dewey, and Louie, it kind of looks CG, which is what scares me. And then they could go like the 7D route, which is just really cartoonish and weird, or the, as you've mentioned, Jeremy, the new Mickey Mouse series. Mm-hmm. I'd be okay with a couple of those, but it's just like, what will please everybody the most? Because I know some fans will be really turned off if they go CG or whatever have you. So I feel like that's the biggest grenade in their egg basket right now.
Yeah, well, if they even do CG, you know, if you've seen some footage of that Peanuts movie, it's CG, but it still has that 2D kind of quality to it. If they were to do something like that, I think that would go over very well. Now, I haven't seen this preview image, so I'm looking for it right now. Oh, is this it? No. There's a February 25th, 2015 variety thing. Yeah, most of what I find is when the announcement was made,
all of the artwork that they put out that was actually previously used for the video games and the movie there.
This is something that my wife actually found online. I'm not sure where she found it. Probably EW, because that's where she gets all of her news. But it's just like, it's the Disney XD logo, and you can see like Huey, Dewey, and Louie, but you just see their backsides, just like their tail feathers sticking up in the air, like they're hiding under the logo with their feet down below it. And granted, the logo is in like a 3D art sort of way, so maybe that's why they look that way. But I'll try to find it and send it to you, and you can post it on the Neverland podcast page if you want.
Yeah, because that's, I'd really like to take a look to kind of see any bit of a little tease they're giving us. But while I've been doing this, I have seen there's a picture here of the new Inspector Gadget, which, you know, also is CG, but yet still has that 2D quality to it. So, you know, it's possible for them to do it. And even the new Mickey Mouse cartoons, if you look at the animation, you can kind of tell it was done on a computer, but yet they still managed to get a very cartoony hand-drawn look. And considering, you know, Disney Animation is still hand-drawing a bunch of Marvel cartoons right now, they could come and hand-draw and make us all really happy, right?
I hope so.
I hope they're listening to this podcast and they take notes.
That's right. Disney listens to every word I say and then takes it as law.
But, you know, my wife brought up a really good point the other night. She said, you know, in this digital age, anything is possible to happen if enough people say something. So if enough people are upset that Terry's not coming back as Launchpad, then the right message boards, the right words might make it happen. And that's what's kind of cool. And you know, that's what Jason at Disney Afternoon, his whole campaign is based off of, word of mouth on the internet. So, yep. I mean, if people are really upset, don't give up hope. Start a protest, a peaceful protest, of course, but start a protest to get it made, you know?
What I can see happening is, like we mentioned earlier, for the Thundercats, you know, had a new cast, of course, but Larry Kenney, who voiced Lion-O, was in the new series as his father.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which was so cool.
I can see that happening with, as long as Terry wants to do it, of course, now. I can see that happening with them coming on as guest appearances.
Yeah. Oh, but here, I know I'm really short on how time I wanted this segment to go, but I have to ask, since they're going to be possibly recasting, is there anyone that you have in mind? And I know, Tim, you've gotten to talk to a lot of different voice actors, but who would you like to, you know, if you had to have somebody else, who would you like to hear playing some of the characters?
Wow.
Good question, Jeremy.
Mm-hmm.
Let me think of some people I've interviewed. Man, that's a good question.
Yeah, and I mean, even and I can't think of the guy's name, Billy Connolly. You know, he's he's done a little bit of voice work, but what if he was to play Scrooge McDuck?
Yeah, I mean,
he's kind of older too, but he's not as old as Alan Young.
Yeah.
Well, I have to bring up a point that I read, and I wish I could cite a source, but I have no idea where it was. But I heard that they wanted to take Scrooge back to a point where he's not Scottish. That was Alan Young's twist on the character, as opposed to how he was actually written. I don't know if that's true, but I hope it's not, because I'd really like a Scottish Scrooge.
Yeah, I don't think we'll do that.
Oh, because he's a McDuck.
Exactly, McDuck, yeah.
Exactly. That's Scottish. Yeah. And there's a lot of actually great Scottish actors, even if you're a Doctor Who fan, there's been some Scottish actors in there. Course, a lot of them are a bit more serious. Matt Smith, I don't think is Scottish, but I know the previous doctor before Matt Smith, and I forgot his name, David Tennant, but he's too serious. But I don't know. I don't know if he'd make a good Scrooge, but he's Scottish, and when you hear him talking his normal Scottish lilt, he might be kind of cool. But I think I'd want somebody a little lighter, because he sounds kind of dark.
Yeah.
He was actually here in Raleigh just last weekend, and we should have had this conversation last week. I could have asked him, but I didn't see him. So. Never mind. Pointless statement. But that's a cool idea. I mean, I don't know. if we to jump back to Inspector Gadget, and I don't know if it's with this new series, but I know in some of the movies, the CG movies that they've done, Maurice LaMarche has voiced Inspector Gadget, but he's doing a Don Adams impression.
Awesome.
So what I would like to see is, and I don't know if Maurice LaMarche would be perfect, but he is like the impressions king if you've ever watched The Critic.
But oh yeah.
if you take him or someone who can do really good voice matching and just have them try to portray Alan Young, that would keep me from getting too lost. But as far as a voice actor, I can't think of any.
I can't think of who wasn't already involved with it, honestly. Yeah.
Yeah, because if like Jim Cummings, I could see him coming back, but maybe cast him in a different part.
Yeah.
And here's kind of what would also be fun. I would actually like to hear, we were speaking about Huey, Dewey, and Louie having different personalities. I would actually like them to have different voices.
Okay. Yeah. I can just see it slightly different. I don't want them like Quack Attack different. I want them, was it different Quack Attack? I don't remember.
Quack.
I didn't watch Quack Attack.
Yeah, it was.
Okay, yeah, I don't.
No, don't waste your time, but it was. Yeah. It was three different actresses.
Okay, that's what I
know it was like Tara Strong, I think, and E.G. Daily, and somebody else.
Yeah, this is not right. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, it could have been fun because, you know, really, because in the original DuckTales, Huey, Dewey, and Louie were almost like three brains that were one brain the whole time. They really weren't that different. They all sounded the same. You never remembered which one was which was kind of actually how they were in the old Donald Duck cartoons. They were kind of a foil for him, and they all had the same brain in three bodies, all had the exact same voice, which actually had kind of the same voice as Donald.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you never remembered which Uncle one was Donald which.
Yeah, I remember the camping episode where they come out of the tent and they're, good morning, Uncle Donald, but they all just, you know, trade off on the words.
And that was part of their appeal, and maybe you just should keep it going with DuckTales. But, if you know, giving them some different kind of personalities, maybe one of them is the sports one of them is the smart one, and I don't know what you do with the third one. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, because it seems like that's kind of how it was with Quack Pack. It was one nerd, one jock, and one other stereotype, which I don't really like that as much, but if you can give them common features but still make them more interested in other things, that's cool.
Yeah.
Plus, I hate playing off stereotypes, and it just gets kind of, it can get offensive if they're not careful.
Right. Oh, and there, I can't remember. I heard actually a pretty good quote on stereotypes actually just this week where somebody's like, you know why they have stereotypes? Because it is kind of true in some cases.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from. We do kind of get used to that, but sometimes we make too many assumptions that somebody fits into that mold. So, and it is sometimes ever used in cartoons, though, that, okay, you know, like even the Powerpuff Girls, each one had very much almost stereotypical, but they were kind of doing different, you know, type of things, you know, because you had the smart leader one, and then you had the I am the rough fighting one, and then they threw in the look, I'm the one that actually behaves like a 5-year-old. And actually, you know, those voices of the Powerpuff Girls, maybe one of them would be awesome to play Huey, Dewey, and Louie. Maybe the voice of Buttercup.
Because
we know she can do kind of a rough, you know, a little bit of tweaking, she could sound like a boy. I bet she could pull it off and be really interesting.
And if I'm not mistaken, she did do Louie in Quack Pack, if I remember correctly. But, I mean, she is great.
Yeah, there you go. And just because I like Rob Paulsen, I think it would be fun to put Rob Paulsen in maybe as Gizmo Duck.
Mm.
Because he can't do those kind of characters that can sound heroically and then yet sound kind of nerdy at the same time.
Or just he's Fenton and get Frank Welker as Gizmo.
Yep.
That would be really fun.
Yeah.
But, I better wrap this up, or my show is going to run really long this week. So, but once again, I've been speaking with Gary and Tim from Saturday Morning Rewind. What's the best way people can find your podcast or your website?
You just go straight to our website. It's at SaturdayMorningRewind.com. We have every single link there, iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter. Please follow us both of those. And and I am at Saturday Rewind on Twitter. And Gary, you are?
I am at SMR Gary.
What is SMR? Oh, wait a minute. Saturday Morning Rewind, Gary. Ha!
Yep.
Okay, I almost asked a dumb question.
I do it frequently. It's just time to, I got to stop myself sometimes.
But yeah, we have some great episodes coming up, so you guys should check that out.
And yeah, I got a lot of, I'm still digging through your past episodes. You got a lot of great stuff in the past and talking to a lot of great guests.
Well, thank you. Yeah, hopefully we'll continue that. We have a couple that we're going to announce, hopefully today or tomorrow, one huge voice actor that I'm hoping I'm going to announce. So follow us on Facebook and Twitter for that announcement.
Alrighty. Yep. Once again, Saturday Morning Rewind.
Yeah.
.com.
To Disney and beyond.
All right, Neverlanders. Next up, I had a conversation with a man named Rick Myers. He has a blog that has recently changed names. If you are familiar with Disney Indiana, you should be. I've had Scott and Tracy on the show before. They on their Facebook page, Rick Myers frequently shares his blog because he does some Disney topics occasionally and some other topics, Marvel related, and sometimes other comics and things like that. But it was known as the Recovering Uber Geek. He has recently changed the name of his blog to Fumbling Forwards. He has a Facebook page and a Twitter page now set up, and he is working on producing a podcast. Well, I had him on the show to discuss, well, basically we're calling it Marvel DC 102, because recall when we did the 101 and we were kind of giving Jesse an education about the past of the comic book industry and how it came up to eventually have the comics code that came into play. Well, unfortunately, when I was talking to Rick, something went crazy with my Skype recorder, and I did lose about 9 minutes off the front of it, where we started talking about the effects of the comics code and the censorship that was placed on comics. And, of course, the root cause being things like Tales from the Crypt and a lot of horror comics and some of those kind of cult type of things that were very, very violent and dark, and it did really freak a lot of people out. Of course, a lot of the root cause was also a book that a psychologist wrote of how the comic books were just leading children down terrible paths and doing horrible things, which was completely untrue. I did unfortunately lose where Rick was telling me about that he actually did get a chance to read this book I believe he said it was at his college. All of that was pretty much lost, but I was able to at least tell you some of what we talked about. I'm going to pick it up here where we were starting to talk a little bit about some of the social issues that popped up in Marvel and also in DC. And he was talking about how in the Green Arrow and in also in Green Lantern, they were dealing with social issues. And while Marvel liked to sometimes symbolize things a little bit and be allegorical with the X-Men dealing with a lot of racial type of things, you know, that they were aiming for. That was kind of the inspiration behind the X-Men, although they didn't really get into it too much. But Green Arrow and Green Lantern would be a bit more direct with dealing with issues. In fact, we were talking about Green Arrow's sidekick, Red Arrow, or Speedy, or Arsenal, however you might know him, he's on Arrow, but he became a heroin junkie, and that was things that they were trying to raise awareness or deal with a drug issue, and of course they conflicted with the comics code when they did that, just like when they were trying to deal with drugs and alcohol with Harry Osborn. They actually had some issues where they could not abide with the comics code, and they did not get their symbol on the comics. But we'll just pick up the conversation from around that time, and you'll learn a lot. And this is certainly not going to be the last time we have Rick on here. He's full of information, and I think you're going to think this is fun and find a lot of fun in this and learn a lot of different things that maybe you didn't know about. And eventually we'll start talking about some of the major story of arcs that did happen, but we didn't quite get into them this time. This was more general discussion, but it's a lot of fun. I think you're really going to enjoy it, and definitely go check out his new blog and check out what he does with his new podcast, which is not really going to be a Disney podcast or anything, but kind of just, you know, talking about life, a lot of things I guess he's planning to do now with his blog. But go check it out. He's a great guy. You're going to love this. Let's go for it.
And basically at that point, you were having a one-upmanship between the two companies about who was being more socially relevant. And part of it was that the beginning of the Marvel was the socially relevant, because you had a teenage superhero who wasn't a sidekick. You had a group of superheroes who were a family. You had a group of superheroes who were a discriminated class. You had, you know, you had the
misunderstood monster who was just trying to be left alone.
Yeah, you had the misunderstood monster slash Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You have your man lost in time with Captain America. Stan wanted it hero before super. He made it about the character before about the superpowers, where DC had become all about the Flash, the bling, you know, the superhero bling, you know, who's got the cooler outfits and whose powers are weird and bizarre.
And the DC universe, they look on their heroes as almost like gods. They're like icons. And I remember anytime I've read any sort of crossover of between like the JLA and the Avengers, it's the DC heroes will get into the Marvel universe and look around. And they'll be like, why do some of these people actually fear you around here, and they revile you, and your places are a little dirty, and they should be spotless and clean and wonderful and everything. And except, you know, of course, Gotham is like the exception of the rule, it seems, in the DC world. He's allowed to have a dirty city.
Gotham and Hub or Quad Cities, basically where the big vigilantes other than Green Arrow live. Because Green Arrow, being the token liberal superhero at DC, he's allowed to have a clean place to live. But that's what was the big thing about Marvel, and that was the basis. And Stan even you have to credit Stan, because he was the creator of one of the first openly African-American characters, openly Asian heroes. And when I mean characters, I mean heroes. You know, previously, people of color were always villains. Yeah. You know, he later, when John Romita was doing Spider-Man, he introduced Latino characters and heroes. I mean, he tried to reflect the world that he was seeing out his door, and New York's was even diverse back then. So,
yeah, and so things are always changing in the Marvel world like that. But let's talk a few of the stories that really kind of were big things. I remember. Checked us also out of the library. You got to go to your local library and see if they've got a good juvenile fiction section or something where they keep all the graphic novels, because, you know, it's a lot of good reading. But they started – I think DC was really the first that started wanting to really do these massive events, and they started doing the crisis type of things, like an identity crisis or an infinity crisis and stuff. And I got to see some of the early ones of those.
Well, that all started in the 80s. To be honest, DC started events, but they weren't house wide. They were a handful of books.
Right.
It started with The Flash of Two Worlds, when they introduced the idea of multiple universes. So they were able to do both the Golden Age and Silver Age Flash together. and then they would do the Justice Society, which is the Golden Age superhero team with the Justice League. And then they created the Crime Syndicate, which of America, which was the evil reverse world, or mirror, mirror, if you're a Star Trek fan, world, you know, version of the superheroes. And that was when you started seeing these crossovers. And then they would do crossovers with Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Shazam, and Superman. And that led to the first couple of DC and Marvel crossovers. Superman and Spider-Man, Batman and the Hulk, you get the idea.
Yeah, those are always fun, and I wish I had a copy of some of them, but I did get to read the old Spider-Man and Superman crossover thing that the Marvel DC collaborated on, and it just kind of cracked me up. Somehow or another, though, it got to where Spider-Man had thought Superman had gone crazy and become a villain or something. I can't remember what had happened. And so Spider-Man first meets up with Superman. Superman's like, here's that Spider-Man guy that's supposed to be in New York. Maybe he can help me track down this villain I'm chasing or whatever. And Spider-Man's thinking, okay, I know this is Superman and it's going to be impossible, but if he's the one killing these people, then I've got to stop him. And so Superman is not really, you know,
toughed himself up. He's just kind of laid back, you know? And so Spider-Man gets in there and starts slugging on him, and Superman's just kind of taking the punches, you know? And Spider-Man starts, you know, he's got the stop balloon like, oh, maybe I can win this. He actually is feeling my punch, and then Superman finally gets tired of it, stiffens up, and locks himself in, and Spider-Man, you see him punch, and he's like, ah! And he's holding his hand, and then Superman also decides, okay, you asked for it, one punch, and this sends Spider-Man just flying through a few buildings. You know, and I just remember laughing. He's just like, because I've always been a Spider-Man fan ever since, like, Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends when I was a little kid. And so I've kind of been leaning more of the Marvel as I went along. Although I did watch the Batman 60 series on syndication, which was campy. And so, yeah, we'll talk about the Frank Miller in the 1989. Wow, that was a big shock to my system because I wasn't used to seeing Batman as a dark character. But I loved Spider-Man since I was a kid. And it was just kind of funny because I loved Superman too, because of course those Superman movies when I was a little kid was huge. But to see those two together was always great. But I always kind of felt bad for poor Spider-Man. But yet it was so funny just watching, you know, just, you know, seeing Superman like, okay, I don't know why you're attacking me. I came here to actually talk to you because I want to work together with you, but you asked for it, you know.
Well, my Superman goes a little older because I grew up in the early 70s, so I'm dealing with the reruns of the George Reeves series.
Ooh, wow.
And I'm seeing those on television as a little kid and eating those up. You know, that was my Superman until Mr. Christopher Reeve shows up.
Yeah.
But the thing is the that series really wasn't as reflective of the comic books because they were based on budget. They weren't doing any of the supervillains. They weren't doing anything like that.
Right.
You didn't get that until the Filmation animated series is in the early 60s. Those definitely had the more of a comic feel to them, including the Aquaman animated series that a lot of people like to poke fun at.
Wow, see, I haven't gotten to see the Filmation series, but I've heard of them. But I think a lot of also the Aquaman that they really like to poke fun of is also, you know, with Super Friends. And the only thing they could think to have Aquaman do is the boop, 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 you know, and he was talking to the animals, you know. Well, and so everybody kind of gets that idea of Aquaman. So I'm kind of glad that he's going to be in a new movie so people can see that he's actually this warrior, you know, King of Atlantis. And you wouldn't want to laugh at him and say that he sucks to his face because he would kill you.
Well, they also in the movie it's Jason Momoa, aka Conan from the last Conan film.
So, yeah, really big dude.
Well, big Polynesian looking dude. They're giving him tattoos and everything. They're going with the Polynesian bent on this version of Aquaman, and that created a bit of a kerfuffle on the internets.
Yeah, he doesn't look – I was expecting maybe – okay, when I heard they cast him, it's like, well, maybe they can blonde his hair up, lighten his hair color just so he kind of looks like the character, because that's kind of my main thing is get somebody who can play the character. But since we already have a visual representation that we're used to, try to get somebody who can kind of look like the character so we can follow along. But yeah, they completely redesigned him from head to toe. And so I look at that and I don't think Aquaman. I'm just, okay, because they're telling me it's Aquaman, I'll go with it. But I'm like, yeah, okay, sure.
Well, sometimes those things work and sometimes they don't. But
yeah.
Momoa is a decent actor. I think he's going to bring a level of gravitas to the character that you'll believe he's the king of the seas.
And he'll show all the cast members of the Big Bang Theory and the writers on the Big Bang Theory that Aquaman does not suck.
Well, in the Filmation series, he did more than just talk to the sea creatures. He also used to create balls of water. And when I mean balls, I mean hardened water to hit the foe is underwater with.
Sort of like Mermaid Man and Barnacle Boy, if you ever watch SpongeBob.
Yeah. What was it, late 90s, they cut his hand off and then gave him a hook, and then they replaced that with a hand made of water and gave him water control. So it depends on who does them. He's going through a renaissance right now in the comics. Jeff Johns is writing it, and they've made jokes scene opens with him at a seafood restaurant ordering seafood, and you're eating your friend. I don't talk with fish. I control fish, and I'm aquatic. I eat fish.
Yeah. Which is actually one of the things that, okay, getting back onto a slightly Disney bent on this, like the Little Mermaid, I know I'm going off topic, but it's a similar type of thought. When you have King Triton, who's so against humans because they fish and they eat fish from the sea and everything, I had to stop every time. Well, what do you eat?
Yeah, there's very few vegetarian life forms in the seas.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? You're probably eating krill or something, aren't you? I mean, I don't think mermaids are living on a seafood or a seaweed diet, you know? Maybe they are, but, you know, they could be eating some, like, coral or something. I don't know. There's a lot of things alive that look like plants, you know, in the sea.
Coral is one of those things. But, yeah, the closest thing would be kelp or algae or seaweed.
Yeah, so they never get into what they eat other than you see Ursula eating, like, shrimp or something there, you know.
Well, she's a bad guy. She's allowed to be a carnivore.
Yeah, I guess. But that always bugged me. But, yeah, so, like, with Aquaman, well, of course, you know, he lives under the sea. They're going to use their resources of what they have for food.
Yeah.
I would still like to see a good crossover between him and Namor the Submariner, because the one thing I find interesting about both those characters is while they can be looked on as heroes, they can also kind of be a little villainous when they need to. If they get ticked off at the land and stuff, they will cause a tidal wave or something and do some damage.
Well, that was the subject matter of the first story arc of the new Aquaman. It was also what they used in the recent Warner Brothers DC Universe animated straight to video film Justice League Throne of Atlantis.
And see, I haven't seen that one, but I did read in some of the comics where he was doing that, and I think it was around about the time where Lex was running for president. Lex Luthor, I'm meaning for anyone who doesn't know what I just was talking about. But yeah, when Lex Luthor was running for president, I've read some old issues where Aquaman was upset about something, and he caused a tidal wave come in towards, I think, towards Coast City even, which is where Green Lantern is. But he had some of his sea monsters coming along with him, and I was like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize he could do this much damage.
Well, he's still a bit of a more of a hero than Namor. Namor has been a villain so many times.
Yeah.
He's flip-flopped more times. It's on one hand, we can count how many times Aquaman's got fed up. Namor, it's how many times was he heroic? There was a comic when they did do the DC versus Marvel in the early 90s. Aquaman solved that problem by dropping a humpback whale on Namor. So because everybody saw who could be who. Well, Namor could fly, but basically they have the same powers except for one. And the aquatic animal control being the key ability that Arthur Curry / Aquaman has over Namor. They did a lot of those in DC. They did all of those alternate reality team ups, and then you end up in the 80s. You have the first two publisher wide events. One was created for a toy line, and the other was to streamline the continuity that had gotten a little bit too wacky. The Marvel event was Secret Wars.
Yeah, and they're about to have another Secret Wars and reset the book on everything, apparently.
Well, but the original Secret Wars was created for a toy line.
Yeah, I remember those toys.
Specifically the toy line for, I believe it was Mattel. I could be wrong. But they did a toy line in the 80s, and that was the big deal with that. And that's the reason why a lot of people who study the whole comic book thing, the whole comic book industry, speak to that as probably the weaker of the cross, the initial two crossovers, because it wasn't really, it was editorially and merchandise based as opposed to based on continuity and storyline.
Yeah, and it was kind of just that thought of, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we got all of our characters all together and had them all fight on this secret planet of, you know, where these two other characters are just watching to see what happens and who would win over good versus evil on a planet where nobody had ever been heroes or villains like this before and all this stuff. And then Spider-Man walks away with a black costume that he finds out later is alive.
Yeah, well, that was also, they were shocked because Magneto was grouped by this omnipotent being with the superheroes. And a lot of people, that is the beginning of the whole idea that even though his methods aren't heroic, his meaning, his intentions are heroic.
Which is actually a very big change from like the original versions of Magneto. I actually I've checked out the library, an X-Men Masterpieces thing, which is still has just the original five before, you know, Wolverine and Nightcrawler, Storm, and Colossus were made part of the team. And it is a very much an evil Magneto, and they're even still refer to themselves as the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants. And their goal is nothing less than the destruction of humanity and nothing but mutants to survive. And so, yeah, his goals were not so noble, but yeah, I like the way that they have evolved the character to where he has become not so much always peaceful about his dealings with humans, but very much still mutant focus. So I think probably Secret Wars was the beginning of that transition where they started trying to look at Magneto a little differently, that he's just maybe an opposite side of the coin of Professor Xavier.
Well, it started in the 70s when Chris Claremont started with X-Men right after the, you know, the giant sized X-Men number one, which is the introduction of the Bronze Age team that everybody knows, which is Wolverine and Colossus and Nightcrawler and Storm and all of those people who later proceeded. Right. There were some other members that were part of that initial team that, but they haven't had the longevity of the ones I mentioned.
Yeah, which is what I wonder with the anytime I try to look at what the X-Men are doing now, there's so many new characters that I'm like, you guys are just inventing characters just to fill the school, because for the longest time, and if you even watch the old 90s X-Men series, the School for Gifted Youngsters only housed just the members of the team. But with the movie, they introduced the idea of, like, wouldn't this be cool if it was actually, like, a complete school for mutants? And you have all kinds of students there, and the X-Men are, like, instructors there. And so the comics started to reflect that. So now suddenly they're just – any crazy idea for a mutant they get, they're going for in those books. But it's just all these extra characters. I really have wondered about the longevity that they're going to have.
Well,
some bizarre things, too.
Well, that all started in the early 80s with the introduction of the New Mutants.
Oh, yeah. You had a new team, but they were in a separate – they weren't even in the same building, I don't believe.
No, they were in the same building, but they were the younger ones. They were the actual team members because by the time that the giant-sized X-Men, the only teenager who was still an X-Men was Kitty Pryde.
Right.
See, was over 20.
Yeah, see, I have a gap of – I've read some of the Chris Claremont and then the New Mutants. I remember they were around, but I started really picking up on X-Men in like the 90s, and you just had – you know, they had all become adults now, and you had – you know, the split teams between, like, they had the blue team and the gold team, I believe it was. And then you had all these different little, you know, you had X-Force with Cable leading them. You had X-Factor, which was a government-sponsored group. It was like the mutant Avengers, pretty much. And then you had the New Mutants. I think the New Mutants had evolved into X-Force, though, hadn't they?
Yes. Cable ended up becoming their new mentor. And he turned them from a bunch of kids learning how to control their powers into an extra military group, even more so than they were the X-Men ever were.
Yeah.
It was also during the beginning of the dreaded pouch era of comics.
The dreaded pouch era.
every superhero had a bandolier or belt full of pouches. Oh. And pouches on there, like, you know, the cargo pants era.
Yeah. Yes. That way they weren't necessarily wearing tights. It's like, no, look, we have pockets and everything. Yeah.
It all started with a character called Longshot.
Yeah.
Because the artist said, well, if he's got all of this gear, where is he going to put it?
Exactly.
And it worked, you know, pouches and pockets work with Batman, but it doesn't work with every superhero.
Yeah.
And in the mid-90s, thanks to Rob Liefeld, you saw it on just about every superhero. Yeah.
I always liked how Spider-Man would sometimes, you'd see him pull up the shirt half of his tights, which you didn't realize he could do, and he would have a like a Spidey belt underneath, and he had a, like a signal light there as a buckle, but he could keep his web cartridges all in these pouches on this belt. Excuse me. I always liked when they kind of introduced that, because it's like, oh, look, how come you can't see, because he's wearing tights, how come you can't see the imprint of his belt when it's got his shirt down? But suddenly, no, there's, look, a belt, and see, and there's pockets and pouches where he keeps the web cartridges.
Well, that was the cool thing about the official handbook of the Marvel Universe, is there was an issue that was all of the equipment and the gadgets, and they actually showed the costume area that Spider-Man has for his equipment, and it's like, is he wearing extra padding for when he hits buildings? That's the reason why you don't see the belt.
Yeah. And plus, he'd always have a camera hidden in there too, because he used to, you know, he'd have a camera and he'd stick it up somewhere so he could get photos, so he could make a living too. It's like, how's there not a bump somewhere where it shows where the camera is attached to his belt?
Yeah, but the thing is that the wonderful thing about Marvel is, they've always tried to explain these things.
Yeah.
Whereas DC would just go, it just is. You know, but back to the events, the event that made DC and the event that kind of led to all the other events that you see. Is the Crisis of Infinite Earths.
Yeah, Crisis of Infinite Earths, when they started crossing over a lot of stuff. And I've actually read that one. That was fun.
Well, it wasn't crossover. It was merging.
Well, yeah. merging the DC universe together.
and they had gotten all too silly. Funny thing is in the last 10 years, DC's done the opposite. They realized they hampered themselves by not allowing the alternate universes. And they... First, they introduced a line called Elseworlds, which allowed them to do stories that were very different. Marvel had their idea. It was called What If.
Yeah.
But What If was always, what if this decision was made after, instead of that decision?
Yeah.
The changes weren't as radical, whereas DC was, well, let's put Batman in the Victorian era.
yeah. What if Superman had landed over in Russia?
Yes, and mm-hmm. Or what if Superman had landed in medieval England?
Yeah.
So you've got the whole idea of let's just take it and run with it over at DC. And those stories became hugely popular.
Yeah.
And then they realized that they needed to bring back the multiple universe, and that led to a series that's being done at DC called Multiversity by Grant Morrison, and he's brought back a lot of the ideas that were thrown out during the Crisis of Infinite Earths.
And which we can talk more about next time. We're going to have you back on, because I'm about run out of time here. We barely scratched the surface. There's so much things we can get into, because we haven't even gotten into like the Phoenix saga over in the X-Men. And of course, the Alien Suit saga, which became around Venom. All the things that happened like during the 80s.
Yes, definitely have me back. It's been fun. It's just I don't usually get to talk about this. But there's a lot of stuff. And we're just centering on the DC and Marvel universe.
Well, this is where I'm going to mainly focus. I mean, there's lots of other companies out there, other companies that have even had the license to do print Star Wars comics after Marvel had given it up or lost it, whatever, from before. There's some other companies that were doing Star Wars comics before Marvel got it back, you know. So there's all kinds of things and all these other companies going out there doing all these different things. And so when you really start getting expanded, you could end up blowing your entire life savings on comic books.
Well, and then you've got the group, the one that I talked about on my blog, CrossGen, which is now also owned by Disney.
Right.
They did a mediocre reboot, or they did a poor attempt. I was going to use another word in front of that, but I was editing myself. But you know what I mean. They didn't really put their full effort in this, and I think it was because Disney asked them to do this, and they were, oh, fine, Disney. You know, it's not our universe. So they didn't even do a lot of the reboots like the original, but the CrossGen is very unique. And like I said in the article that all started this for you, which was the Marvelously Disney-fied article, I even mentioned two of those properties to become Disney animated films,
which would be pretty cool.
Well, guess what I found out after you and I talked? I found other people who after the Big Hero 6 thing mentioned the first choice to become an animated Marvel film. Everybody kept saying Power Pack, Power Pack, Power Pack. It wasn't just me.
So it could happen. Who knows? If, you know, enough word gets around and enough, because sometimes Disney does listen to what's out there. It's like, hey, can we make a movie off of this? And everybody seems to want one. Let's do it. It's money.
Well, Disney listens as opposed to Marvel.
Yeah.
Marvel has had a history of not listening.
Marvel, I'm hearing, I've been hearing some words that Marvel has been listening and paying attention, and Dan Slott has been paying attention to some stuff around, like with Spider-Man, that we haven't been happy with the brand new day and some of the changes made to Spider-Man, that part of the Secret Wars that's going to happen might be resetting some things with Spider-Man and putting things right. But I'm not sure that that's true. That's just rumors I'm hearing. We'll just see what happens.
I have a friendly acquaintance of mine, David F. Walker, who just got assigned on both DC and Marvel. He's the new writer for the Cyborg series, and he's also going to be doing a couple of issues of the Secret Wars. He chose to do Blade versus Howard the Duck.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, he's an African-American gentleman who also is doing a not-so-family-friendly comic book. He's doing a variation of the blaxploitation film based on the novels, Shaft.
Oh, my goodness.
So I can't even say the name of his blog because...
It's not family-friendly.
Well, the way he spells it is... He uses the A word with two Zs, but yeah. he is definitely trying to he's the one that these two companies are pointing up. We're even getting diverse creators, and here's Dave.
Yep. Okay. So. Well, but thank you for coming on with us, and we'll have to have you back on real soon because this is fun just talking comics and just we being stupid geeks, you know.
Well, yeah, it is. And the thing is, you know, with the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe, we're given so much more chance to do this, and it's like a lot of people earlier a year ago, around February, Forbes did a thing about three big tentpole films that they thought were going to fail at the box office. They were only right once. And the three films they thought were going to fail was RoboCop, which did.
I like that movie, though.
But it didn't do well at the box office.
Yeah.
Godzilla, which did well.
That was a cool movie.
And then Guardians of the Galaxy. And they were going, yes, it's a C-list group and no one knows of it. But people keep forgetting, what was the first Marvel movie that blew everybody's minds?
Blade.
And Blade is not a B-list. He's not a C-list. He's a D-list supporting character to a 70s Marvel horror comic.
Yep.
And if you had seen his comic book, costume from the 70s, you'd roll your eyes.
Yeah.
Because it's a tan leather coveralls with a belt and a green set of goggles. It's pretty bad. And that was when I heard that they were doing that film. I was like, they're doing Blade? They have made this look. And, you know, we get Wesley Snipes doing his job. And that, folks, that is definitely not a family-friendly series of films.
Right. I only ever saw the first one, though. I should probably watch the other two at some point. But
the other one.
Yeah, I heard the third one was just awful. So,
well, you got to watch the Guillermo del Toro one, at least.
Oh, did he do the second one?
He did the second one, and then, you know, you have Ron Perlman.
Yeah, which makes anything almost worth watching.
So yeah. Yeah, too bad that Mr. Perlman rarely does family-friendly film. Or television by that point. But.
Right.
But, yeah.
Alrighty. But, all right, so once again, where can people find your blog and upcoming podcast? So you're just calling, what, Falling Forward?
Fumbling Forwards.
Fumbling Forward with Rick. I don't know if you want to go by Rick or Richard, because you're on Skype, it says Richard, but I've always seen you as Rick Myers.
It's Rick Myers. Skype wanted my legal name. So,
better than your illegal name, I suppose.
Well, my birth certificate says Richard. And Rick is a form of that name. But the Facebook page is Fumbling, the number 4 words. And then the blog is at R.D. as in David, Myers, M-Y-E-R-S, 97115.blogspot.com.
Awesome.
Neverland feedback.
All right, we have a couple of shout outs for you this week. That would be two new Twitter followers, Justin Desjardins. It's Desjardins. I hope I pronounced your name right, but I probably butchered it. Also, a very interesting new Twitter follower, Ben Landis. He is at Ben Landis, all one word. He makes chiptunes and has a SoundCloud page that I went and checked out and everything and listened to some of it. Chiptunes, from my understanding, it sounds like 8-bit Nintendo, and he's composing his own bits of music. And I listened to some of it. It's really fun, especially if you're about my age and used to play the old Nintendo and you love that kind of music. Really, really great, great stuff. I really enjoyed listening to it, and I've sent him a message. I was wondering if maybe we could get him to compose up some special music here for the Neverland podcast and potentially a new podcast that I'm working on with Tim Nidell. We haven't quite finished all the details or started recording it yet, but keep your ears open and we will let you know all about it when it's about to release.
Scientists, newsmakers, policy changers, advocates, and more. Join me, international award-winning journalist Michael Howie, as I interview those in the know on wildlife issues and advocacy around the world on Defender Radio. Posted every Monday on the iTunes Store and at furbeardefenders.com. Listen to Defender Radio, and you too can stay informed and stay strong. Presented by Gates Wildlife Control and the Association for the Protection of Fur-Bearing Animals.
Right. Once again, I want to thank you for downloading the Neverland podcast and listening this week, and thank you also for sharing it with your friends. Heck, share it with your enemies. Go right ahead. Come back next week. We're going to have lots of fun next week. In fact, I'm planning on an early show because I want to get in on some fun for Wednesday. So I plan on recording something real soon and getting it out on Wednesday, and we're going to have some fun. But until then, remember to keep your pixie in your pocket. And what I mean by that is that young of heart, good attitude that you can keep with you to remain young in heart and then share that with other people. Sometimes it just takes a smile, a hug, or a handshake, you know? Sometimes you just got to be nice to people. So go out and love on somebody, and I will see you very, very soon right here on the Neverland Podcast. God bless.
Thank you for listening to the Neverland Podcast. Please subscribe and rate the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and Blueberry. We love to hear from you on twitter.com/NeverlandPcast and facebook.com/NeverlandPodcast. Leave us a voicemail at 816-226-6492 and send email to podcast@neverlandpodcast.com. Join us next week and we'll once again go to Disney and beyond. The Neverland Podcast is copyright Glue Band Productions and all original content belongs to the same. Other content is copyright of their respective creators and is used under Creative Commons license.
Good night, Neverland!
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.